And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we have a great show for you this week. We're going to obviously catch up on the news and breaches of the week and all of that. And our deep dive is going to be into technology, basically killing the autonomy of our children. Anywhere from, let's say, middle school to college age, we are being surveilled at an alarming rate. And with the backdrop of social media and all of that, we are creating a generation that is going to have a very serious problem entering adulthood, and it is something society-wide we need to talk about, and I hope to hear from you on that. It'll be a great hour, so stick around, and as always, we start with the news. And this week's smart home news is basically on Amazon, Google, and Apple, the three leaders in smart home devices. And the question is, are they going to start actually sharing what they data mine on you via their smart home devices with each other? Now, here's what's going on. Amazon, Google, and Apple and the Zigbee Alliance, which we will get to soon, about 2 weeks ago or so, announced a rare partnership that's focused on making smart homes easier for everybody to use and achieve. It's called Project Connected Home over IP, and it will work to create a new standard for the smart home so that people can buy products knowing that they'll work with whatever system they have at home. So in other words, if you have an Amazon Echo or a Google Home or an Apple, whatever they call their home product, I can never remember what it's called, you'll know that it'll have interconnectivity with all of the other smart home devices that you have. Basically, a logo on the box of what the product that you're buying will let consumers know if it is supported by Project Connected Home over IP. Now, the one that's tying them all together is the Zigbee Alliance, and these are companies that are already creating a uniform standard for interconnectivity on the various gadgets, devices, smart locks, and light bulbs, and all that kind of stuff. And so, these products are Samsung SmartThings, Schneider Electric, Signify, which is formerly Philips Lighting, IKEA, NXP Semiconductors, Resideo, and a couple of others. And so as we bring this into the ecosystem, you could have an Amazon Echo in one room and a Google Smart Home in the other, and both would be able to basically control any features that you have, lighting or blinds or door locks, whatever that is. But here's the thing. We know that these things data mine us to the nth degree. I've literally done live demonstrations on an Amazon Echo where I'm giving it its keyword and I'm saying various things outside of its keyword. So we all know the keyword, and I've been told on air not to say that word. I actually got an email from somebody at one of the radio stations saying, hey, you know, our Amazon Echoes went nuts as soon as you said the trigger word. But I said Blexa, Rexha, Smexa, Integra, you know, all of these things around the A-L-E-X-A word, and then you see it fire up as soon as I say that word. And so it has to be listening continuously in order to do this. We also know that these things with built-in cameras, they have recognition technology. So if you're walking around with, let's say, the t-shirt of your favorite band, the camera on this smart device can identify that and then basically sell you merchandise or maybe tickets to their upcoming concert, you know, this kind of thing. And so, basically, are we going to see these three companies through this standard have the ability to share what they data mine, possibly for profit? Now, Amazon is by far the leader in this with more Amazon Echo smart home devices in homes than Google and Apple, probably Google and Apple combined, although I don't have those numbers in front of me. And so would it be in Amazon's best data mining / profitability interest to sell that telemetry, to sell that information to Google and to Apple? You know, if you've got, let's say, Apple products connected to your Amazon Echo, does it make sense that those two basically jointly share the intelligence that they are building? Apple's model is different than Amazon and Google. While Apple is basically wanting to sell you gadgets and all of this, they are now getting into the service business, ramping up, you know, the Apple TV streaming services and all of this. So they are going to start data mining in a way that Apple really has never Apple data mined before. Whereas Google basically gives you free stuff because they are data mining you. And if you're an advertiser, you pay Google to get in front of that targeted and selected audience that they have cultivated so well. Amazon has a massive ad service as well. And so there's a little bit of that, even though they are selling you books and movies and pretty much anything on the planet. So that is your news of the week. The Project Connected Home over IP may make your life a lot easier in connecting and finding products to whatever smart home device you're running as the core of your network. But be aware and please understand that as these things share information, they're sharing information on you and your family. And I will say this one last thing. Amazon took it to the point where they went to these third-party, prior to this, they went to these third-party IoT devices, for example, the light bulb makers of the world, and they wanted to know when you turn off your lights, not just through the smart home device when you say, you know, hey, Amazon, trigger word, turn off the light. They also want to know if you go and manually turn it off as well. And so they can track when you turn your lights on and off and with what frequency and all of that. This is how deeply they data mine. I did an entire video on that. It's insane. So take that for what it's worth, but that is your Amazon / Google / Apple smart home news of the week. And now for some Christmas news. And yes, we are actually doing Christmas news because this relates to this radio show. If you were not familiar, Christmas is actually one of the largest hacking days of the year. Now, let me put this into context for you. About 5 years ago, this past Christmas, so 2014, both the Xbox and the PlayStation launched new consoles that sold literally millions of units. Tons of people were basically hoping to wake up Christmas morning and basically get their game on, and sadly, that wasn't the case. And if you're listening to this and you remember that fateful 2014, you know where I'm going with this. A hacking group called the Lizard Squad on December 24th, 2014, Christmas Eve, launched an attack against the computer networks and the infrastructure of both the Microsoft Xbox and the Sony PlayStation, and they succeeded in knocking the networks offline for most of the next 48 hours, basically turning these $350 plus gaming machines into paperweights. I mean, that was basically what it was. You have to connect online to basically get all the good features and stuff. And if you couldn't get to the PlayStation network or the Xbox network, I mean, here you are. So for hackers, Christmas Day is now a peak time to demonstrate their skills, purposefully anger people, or try to extort money from companies or businesses that might be understaffed and vulnerable, yet offering something like a public product. For online retailers or video game networks, the attacks may hit when consumers have the highest expectations that computer systems will work and tie many computer professionals to their desks this holiday. So, in other words, as the cyber attacks come, basically, the IT nerds and the cybersecurity nerds of your life are the ones that have to report to work to try to stop this. Not to mention the fact that, come on, man, you're just like ruining a little kid's, you know, Christmas. I remember as a little kid, you know, getting a Nintendo, and I was so excited, and it took my dad a while to, you know, put it together or rather to plug it in because, you know, it just, he didn't know, you know, what he was doing with it. And so he had to call, you know, Nintendo and get support. I'm sure he was one of, you know, millions of parents that probably called, you know, that particular Christmas. And so I had to impatiently wait for him to get this going. And when it was so exciting. And so imagine being a little kid now getting the latest Xbox or PlayStation, plugging it in, and then basically saying can't connect to the PlayStation network or the Xbox network or whatever it is. I can imagine the frustration of that. And who, you know, really, guys, I mean, if there are any, you know, criminal hackers listening out there, man, I know there's no honor among thieves, but seriously, it's Christmas. you know, don't be cool with this. Now, it's this thing that basically we have, you know, we have as an issue, and it's continuing to increase. The only possible exception of being the biggest hacking day of the year is possibly Black Friday, because we have seen a massive amount of cyber attacks hitting on Black Friday when people are trying to shop online or go to stores and all this kind of stuff, not to mention Cyber Monday and all of that. So again, if you are a criminal out there that thinks this is really cool, and for the record, a lot of the Lizard Squad has now been arrested. They have been found and arrested because they cost both Microsoft and Sony millions, if not billions, of revenue, you know, within the 48 hours, where they were hitting them hard. So think twice about doing it. But we seem to have gone through Christmas, because obviously I am talking about this, with some attacks, some outages, but PlayStation and Sony stayed up, as did a lot of the streaming services and all of that. So hopefully we're going to see this die down, but we always brace for Christmas, and I thought just coming off the heels of Christmas, that would be an interesting news story. So take that for what it's worth, but that is your Christmas news of the week. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And in Facebook news, because how can we escape it? Facebook just caught a massive disinformation campaign that really underscores how much trouble our elections in 2020 are actually in. Now, here's what's going on. A couple of weeks ago, in late December, Facebook removed what it is called a global network of more than 900 accounts, pages, and groups from its platform and Instagram that allegedly used deceptive practices to push pro-President Trump narratives to about 55 million users. And for the record, this is not a this is not political news. I am not blaming the Trump administration, for this at all. When we are looking at this, because there's also been disinformation on other candidates as well, this is simply a very serious issue. And so I have no evidence that this was proliferated or supported by the Trump administration. I just want to say that because I am pretty apolitical here, and I don't care what your beliefs are with this, but I think it's important to note. Now, this network of disinformation used fake accounts, artificial amplification, meaning basically they could pay to boost these messages, and notably profile photos of fake faces generated using artificial intelligence to spread polarizing and predominantly pro-Trump, pro-President Trump, content around the web, including Twitter and YouTube. This appears, according to researchers, to be the first large-scale deployment of AI-generated images in the social network. So, the images that were used to enhance the authenticity of some 610 Facebook accounts, 156 groups, 89 pages, and 72 Instagram accounts associated with the quote-unquote BL, which is a digital news outlet that described itself as, and I quote, pure mountain spring moistening the heart of every reader, end quote, on Facebook before it was removed. Facebook's investigation connected the BL to the Epoch Times, which is a media organization with ties to a Chinese spiritual group, Falun Gong, with a history of very aggressive support for the president. And so we have a couple of different things that we need to unpack here. One, the reason why we would use artificially created images, like AI, to create images is because spotting a fake account can be really easy if the account is not populated with things. And so you can go spin up a fake account and, you know, put one or two pictures in there. But if you are, let's say, spinning up an artificial intelligence created human, then you can build a whole bunch of different pictures with different backgrounds, all of this. It makes the account look more legitimate. So when the automatic scanners for Facebook look at this, they're seeing those telltale characteristics of what a typical human user would do, such as posts, such as pictures, such as interaction, and all of that. And so it is becoming harder and harder for Facebook to start tracking this kind of stuff. And so that's a very serious issue. The next thing that we need to talk about here is the fact that of the big four, when we are talking about political advertising, Twitter, Google, Facebook, and we can throw Instagram on there as well, is that basically, and LinkedIn is the other one, is that Facebook is basically the only one that is blindly accepting political advertisement and information from groups, politicians, and all of this. Mark Zuckerberg famously got questioned by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, where she asked, and I've mentioned this on the radio, where she said, well, if I run an advertisement saying that Lindsey Graham supports the Green New Deal, which Lindsey Graham absolutely does not, Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg basically said, yeah, we'd probably let you get away with it. You know, this is what we're talking about here. They're not policing it. Twitter basically said, we're not going to do political advertising whatsoever. You know, if you want to attract followers, political candidate or incumbent, you know, go bring them to Twitter and tweet. LinkedIn refuses as well. And Google has, I would say, a fairly stringent policy in terms of generating these ads. They are a lot more stringent than Facebook basically saying, oh, hey, run a political ad. Groups have been able to run political ads with blatantly false information just to see if they could do it. And while the posts have been taken down, it's not before they've been proliferated to, you know, thousands or potentially tens of thousands of voters in specific areas. And if you're running a disinformation campaign, it may be worth, you know, if you're paying for 5 days of advertising only to get two, because you can just spin up another group and then do the same damn thing there. This is what we're talking about here. And Facebook, you know, while I'm glad they caught this disinformation campaign, they actually let this disinformation campaign both be created, grow, and start populating users and followers on both Facebook and Instagram before it was caught. It's retroactive. And so basically, while they're capping the damage has already been done. This is what we're talking about. And this is a very serious problem that we tend to have essentially with Facebook worldwide. And so it's a serious issue, and we're seeing this. And so as we're gearing up for 2020, please, if you are looking at anything on Facebook, whether it's shared from a friend or an article you're reading or a group that is advertising to you, please take it with a grain of salt. Please use your brain critically. And if you support the president and you're seeing pro-Trump information, verify the facts. And if you hate the president and you're seeing anti-Trump information, verify the facts. This goes for everybody. I don't care what your political spectrum is, you know, good, bad, or ugly, whatever it is. We need critical thinking. We need to question these things because it is so, so easy to proliferate this information online. And that is your Facebook news, unfortunately, of the week. And in Apple ecosystem news, and I found this absolutely fascinating, Apple is looking to be its own wireless provider. So forget Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile, etc. They want to do that. And they want to do that for every iPhone on the planet. Now, the question is, how is this going to impact major telecom carriers? But here's the backdrop. As of November 1st, 2018, there's a total of more than 2.2 billion iPhones that have been sold. That number is obviously higher because that's about a year old at this point. In this same period, over 350 million iPads have been sold since 2010. That is over 2.5 billion devices on the planet that are Apple made, and now they want to bypass basically the mobile phone carriers and offer internet themselves. So here's what's going on. According to a report from Bloomberg, Apple has a secret team of engineers specializing in aerospace, satellites, and antenna design working on this project. And I quote, "Apple's work on communication satellites and next-generation wireless technology means the aim is likely to beam data to a user's device, potentially mitigating the dependence on wireless carriers or for linking devices together without a traditional network. Apple could also be exploring satellites for more precise location tracking for its devices, enabling improved maps and new features. Apple hopes to deploy these satellites within the next 5 years. So by 2024 or so, we may see a ring of Apple satellites orbiting the planet. Now, Apple basically becoming its own space-based ISP isn't that far out of an idea. The company has increasingly made moves to design and control every aspect of its products, and it's also been moving into streaming to create its own ecosystem. Obviously, it has iTunes for music and movies and all of that. It created Apple TV. It is now creating a streaming service and a production studio, I think similar to what Netflix is trying to do. And if you combine that with, let's say, them giving you satellite, they are creating an ecosystem that would basically isolate iPhones under their own infrastructure outside of regular computers, Androids, all of this stuff. Now, obviously, these phones would have the ability to connect to local Wi-Fi as well, but that's a very interesting move, I think, by Apple. And as we see this potentially ramp up in 2020 and 2021 to be ready for 2024, I think we're going to get a clearer picture of this. I don't think that Apple would spend billions of dollars basically hiring an army of secret engineers to build satellites just to improve maps, and location data, because quite frankly, I mean, Apple Maps is definitely lagging behind Google Maps. Nobody is going to disagree with that, but they don't need to spend billions of dollars on satellite infrastructure to do that. I think that would be a side benefit to them ramping this up. But I think what they're doing is they are going to create an exclusive network, which keeps in their brand. They've always been ecosystem focused ever since Steve Jobs created the Apple IIe. They have their own brand. They have their own ecosystem. They have these specific hoops that if you want to work with Apple as a manufacturer of hardware or software, you have to meet this guideline, as opposed to the opposite tack that Microsoft and more recently Google has taken, where they say, you know what, this is for everybody. We're going to unite the planet. There are way more Android devices out there than Google by, way more Android devices out there than Apple devices. But that's because pretty much anybody can download the Android operating system and put it on virtually anything. And so you have a slew of just ridiculously cheap Android devices in the world that consumers in less affluent areas snap up left and right. And then obviously you have the high-end models, the Samsungs of the world as well. You know, for Android, they run the gamut. But Apple's a closed ecosystem. And so I'm very curious to see where this goes, you know, what they're going to do with the performance and speed of a satellite connection, because one of the biggest issues in satellite has always been the latency. Basically, your signal's got to beam up into the, you know, into space, and then that's got to be received and beam back down. And that gap in latency is why a lot of corporations are not really using satellite except as backup, or unless the satellite infrastructure is so massive that latency goes away. And on a mobile phone, that is going to be a very interesting challenge, which is why I think they've got antenna designers working on this as well. So that is your Apple news of the day. And I'd be curious to know if you would be all in drinking Apple's Kool-Aid to be completely in their ecosystem. Forget all the other services as well. Forget the Netflixes and the Disney Pluses and the Hulus of the world. Would you be all in on Apple everything? And that's what they're trying to do: subscription services, and basically run your technological life. And I think that's a very interesting move for Apple, but it is consistent with what they've always done. So that again is your Apple news of the week. And finally, in Greta Thunberg news, and if you are familiar with Greta, she is the 16-year-old young woman that has basically taken governments to task for climate change. She was nominated she is Time's Person of the Year. That's Time Magazine. But if you didn't know, she's also 2019's Crimes Person of the Year. Crime, not Time. She's the person of the year. Now, here's what's going on, and I am not accusing Greta of being part of this, but what we see among the holidays, and we're just coming out of Christmas and New Year's and all of that, is that we see a slew of email phishing campaigns that are tagged around the holidays. And so one that was going around basically was in support of Greta Thunberg. At least it said that. And it basically said, if you want to support Greta, you can donate to her cause and give your children a gift that will last a lifetime. Please open up this file to support Greta and find out times when she's going to be in your area and all of that. And this was a massive phishing campaign to the tune of millions of emails being sent. And it was discovered by the researchers over at Proofpoint. They're an enterprise spam filtering service. And so Greta Thunberg, unfortunately, was part of a phishing scam to try to support her. And there's going to be a lot of people that do like her, that do support her. There might be people that don't like her as well. I know that in some ways she's been polarizing to some of the population. Might open that email to say, oh, well, I'm going to find out when she's going to be in my area so I can protest her, or something along those lines. So it's affecting everybody in this sense. And it really underscores the need to double check all of these things, especially around the holidays when these things ramp up. We start to get fake Christmas cards, fake, Easter, fake New Year's, fake, 4th of July, take your pick on the holiday, wherever you are. And there's going to be some email hacker group that is going to send you phishing email on it. If they've got access to, mailboxes around you and that you're in the address book of, then it'll come from a friend and all of that. And so, if you're, a climate activist that got hit, you would be the ideal person then to send out an email to, your thousands of contacts saying, hey, come open this, and join me and Greta Thunberg and all of that. And this is literally what is happening. So just beware if you're getting an email with an attachment that says support Greta Thunberg, this holiday season. And I know we're just past it, but these emails will probably start to die down in the next couple of weeks or so. Ideally, just don't open it. Just delete it. You're not supporting Greta Thunberg. You're probably getting yourself infected or worse. So with that, Greta Thunberg is Crimes Person of the Year for 2019. And sorry, Greta, but that is a title, unfortunately, I have to bestow on you. And that is, again, no offense to her. It's just unfortunate. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout-out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout-out on the air. With that, let's begin. And this week's Breaches of the Week is actually the very last breaches of the week of 2019, even though we're, you know, sitting here and most of you will be listening to this at the new year. This is basically the last back half of December for data breaches. And before we get going, I'd like to thank Chris Faulon, David Walker, and Sandor Sleidnerink for actually sending me in some of these. Guys, it's always appreciated. And if you have a tip for me, as I said in my preamble, please send it in. You will get a shout out on the air as well. Starting with Germany, we are talking about Justice Liberg University. Now, a non-standard and somewhat weird password reset operation has been underway at this German university, where more than 38,000 students and staff were asked in the couple of weeks ago to stand in line with their ID card and a piece of paper to receive new passwords for their email accounts. Now, the university suffered a malware infection a few weeks ago, and basically they're not disclosing the type of infection that it was, but it was so severe that it took down the entire infrastructure of the university, and they are literally forcing students to line up old-fashioned pen and paper to get new passwords. That is absolutely bonkers, and so hopefully they're back up and running by now. And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.